Global Sport Matters presents, in collaboration with Columbia University Sports Management, the Sports Professors Podcast, where professors Kenneth Shropshire and Scott Rosner discuss the 101 on what happened in sports business.
Hello, and welcome to the Sports Professors Podcast. Scott Rosner from the Sports Management Program at Columbia University, along with my colleague and friend, Ken Shropshire, the CEO of the Global Sport Institute at Arizona State University. How are you doing today, Ken?
Doing great, Scott. Doing great. A lot of good sports stuff going on. So anxious to speak with you.
Yeah, a lot of interesting and from Olympics to baseball name teams changing names to college landscape potentially shifting. Lots to cover in this week's episode. So, what have you been paying attention to? What caught your has caught your eye over the last few days? And as we sit here, as a reminder to our listeners, it is Thursday, July 29th. What do you got, Ken?
I'm overwhelmed by it, not in a negative way, but just in terms of focus on mental illness and athletes, and Simone Biles leading the way. Naomi Osaka kind of started us off when we looked at her level of performance and wonder if it was all too much for her, if that in the end was a good part of why she was not successful in moving forward in the games. And then Simone Biles just stepping away and directly attributing, kind of this new world format that I'm not going to participate because I need to deal with my mental health. It's just a fascinating moment, and it's what I'm watching, especially to see how people react to it. I mean, both in terms of, from our standpoint, the business of sports, how does the International Olympic Committee, the USOPC and others, how do they deal with this? And then other sports too, is this going to be a tipping point in terms of addressing these issues more seriously? And then on a less important level, but maybe as important, how people react to it, how the press reacts to it, the kinds of things that are said. Are there references to old sports tropes about choking and toughen up and all that sort of thing too? So that's what I'm really paying the closest attention to. But even though there are some more traditional business issues out there, I don't know what your thoughts are on that or what you're looking at closely this week as well.
So with respect to Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka, the landscape has 100% shifted. And, I think that we are in a much different world, which is a very positive thing, than we were even 2-3 years ago. And the conversations towards mental health, that have been held, I think big picture have been very positive. I think the social media impact and reaction so far towards Biles has been overall favorable. As we sit here this morning, not to play spoiler, but if you missed this by the time you listen to it, then your head is really buried in the sand. we have Suni Lee of the United States getting the gold medal in the all-around event that took place just several hours ago as we sit here again Thursday morning. And so I look at the Biles scenario as one that, good for her. I'm glad she stepped up. I think there could very well be a business impact on her going forward. Brands will likely stick by her. I think her sponsors stick by her. But do they stick by her for the long term? That remains to be seen. She was planning her own post-Olympic tour, not the traditional USA Gymnastics Associated tour. This was a solo ride that was going to be that is going to be held after the games. Let's see where that goes. Big picture again, very, very positive for mental health perspective and for athletes and young people, in particular, the young athletes who go through this unbelievable amount of stress. And obviously this year with COVID and the training process being really disrupted and a year delay, and the stress just builds and pressure just builds and builds and builds. We'll see where it goes. I think that the negative commentary around Biles has been on that some of this that I have seen, at least, is that some of this, you know, is being perceived as being self-inflicted, you know, by everything from wearing a goat on the leotard to planning this own post-tour, you know, to, you know, if you are going to be, again, this is what I have read, not necessarily what I believe, but the idea that if you are going to be put out there as the face of the games and you're a willing participant in being the face of the games, there is a pressure that is obviously going to come with that. And so we'll see where ultimately all of this shakes out, but certainly something that, you know, I think I agree with you. We've both big picture, long-term stories really both kept our eyes on this week.
Yeah. When you said there hasn't been a negative reaction and it's been pretty positive. Now, I was about to say, you know, Michael Phelps is a good model for how the world treats you in terms of endorsements after you make a public announcement like. But I think the difference is, and yet correcting myself, he didn't step away at the toughest moment, which is what some people will point to. That can be pointed to as a very positive thing. That this is kids, this is what you should do. This is the way you should react. And I had a chance to speak with some young athletes in a sport the other day about what they would do. And these were young men fresh out of high school on their way to college, and they couldn't perceive of the issue. I mean, it's interesting to think about it. I mean, if you haven't had the big mental health moment, and we tried to give them scenarios about, you know, parents passing away or that sort of thing, you're going to go out there, because the old message is what, you know, my mom would have wanted me to, or I'm doing it for the team, or all that sort of stuff, you know, win one for the Gipper, that all these things are the way that we looked at, as opposed to what Simona said, take care of yourself, which is a whole new day, which, yeah, you know, you know, as well as I, some of these old school coaches are not going to go for that. This is, there's going to be, we're going to get some YouTube videos of some high school and college coaches, maybe even referring directly to that. I mean, maybe saying, we, you know, you get your head in this, we don't have time for that kind of stuff. So it's going to be an interesting seen it. But I, to be clear, you know, like you, Scott, to make it be clear, I'm fully supportive of what she did. I think it was a very difficult move. I tried to think back at times in my life when maybe I should have stepped away instead of trying to do something that I wasn't prepared to do.
Yeah. And I think that from a coaching perspective, you need to evolve. The best coaches evolve over time. And what may have worked when you were playing sports and when I was playing sports doesn't work now as a coaching technique. Kids have changed. You know, society has changed. And, you know, the way that coaches coach has to evolve. And so if this is a positive step in that direction as well, great. You know, and I think that, you know, bigger picture, you know, treating a mental health issue, if you think of it, it's like a mental injury, right, is the phrase that you hear,
right.
Is in many ways quite similar as a physical injury. And we need to get used to addressing that in a proper way.
And to be clear, Scott, I still don't drink water when I work out because that would be weak.
Right, exactly. So Ken, for our listeners, you know, the old coaching mantra from when we were younger, and certainly when Ken was younger, that water makes you weak, you know, and so you shouldn't drink water when you're working out because it's a sign of weakness. That's the kind of thing that we think about and talk about, you know, old school coaching. That's like the quintessential phrase that we associate with, you know, older coaching methods. Water makes you weak, when everyone knows, obviously, that's not the case.
Right. I mean, how wrong that was and how wrong we were to not accept these kinds of issues that Simone and Naomi are raising now. So hopefully, as you say, it's a new day.
That is exactly right. So what else have you been keeping your eyes on? I mean, there's a lot going on in the Olympic front. There's a lot going on the intercollegiate athletics front. A lot going on in general.
Yeah, but, you know, the college thing, this whole conference realignment moment, here we go again with both Oklahoma and Texas combining, which was the case that we've forgotten about earlier. I forget how many years ago that was when we had the first big shift in teams from conferences at the college level, looking to move from the Big 12 to the SEC. And, you know, if not difficult to trace the reasons for any of this, it's money once again. And I do think we're about to see another big shifting moment. I do think that it's musical chairs. And I think that the schools that are, you know, on the fringe or have a chance to move up somewhere or in a conference that's going to be in disarray need to make sure they've got a chair and they've got some options to look at. I don't know what's your view been of this so far?
Yeah, the dominoes are about to start falling. Now, where those dominoes ultimately wind up, we'll see. Oklahoma, Texas, and we'll start with the latter first. I mean, Texas has, as a university, always been one that has acted in its own self-interest, going back to, you know, even if you think about the most recent big shift with the creation of the network and the leverage that they had over the Big 12, they understand leverage. Ken, you and I both teach negotiation. The University of Texas certainly understands the leverage that they hold in over the rest of the Big 12, right? I think we're both pretty well aware of that. They have not been afraid to use that leverage in situations where it would behoove them to do so. So right. I certainly think that that is what we're seeing now with Texas. Oklahoma is the right dance partner with them. They're the only other school, quite frankly, in the existing Big 12 that has the gravitas that's even close to University of Texas. With all due respect to the other members of the conference, if football drives the bus, the two big players from a football perspective, certainly from a brand perspective, are the Universities of Texas, the University of Oklahoma. So certainly on that front, they're the right partner to bring along with them. Now, where does this leave the 8 remaining schools in the Big 12? So for our listeners, remember, there's 10 schools in the Big 12, not 12, if you're unfamiliar with the landscape. And, so where does that leave the remaining 8?
And how many, and 12 in the Big 10? I mean, it's
yeah, right. So the Big 10 is about to go, my sense is this could go a few different ways. Either, you know, the Big 12 figures out a way to exist with 8 remaining teams, and maybe they go back to the old Big 8 days that we grew up with, when it was primarily the Texas schools and Oklahoma schools. So that's one option, that they figure out a way to make that work. They're not nearly as attractive, not even close, without Texas and Oklahoma. So will the rest of that conference crumble and those schools then disperse? That's possible. Will they get 2 replacement schools to come into play? Most likely you're looking at schools from the American Athletic Conference, the Mountain West to come in and fill the shoes of Oklahoma and Texas, and maybe a couple more along those ways. So that's where you see schools like Cincinnati mentioned as a possibility, as one of the schools, University of Houston as another school that could join in that conference. Does the Big 12 really, you know, if they disintegrate and the schools go elsewhere, going back to that, who winds up where, right? What school does the Big 10 annex anyone in? Does the Pac-12 annex anyone in? So there's a few things that we know are going to happen, right? There's definitely going to be more changes one way or the other. And second, there are definitely going to be schools engaging in some opportunistic behavior as they try to move up in rank. So this is like the Jefferson's moment, right? Time to move on up to a deluxe apartment in the sky. And there's nothing wrong with that as the university to get themselves in the right place. What always concerns me in these scenarios is not actually football and men's basketball, which are driving the bus, generally speaking, from a revenue perspective. It's all of the other sports that are brought along with it. And what happens to the student athlete experience in those sports? So does it make sense for a non-revenue sport athlete to be flying across the country to play in a midweek game? Probably not. That level of competition that will be suitable for that student athlete and appropriate for that student athlete is probably, in most instances, just in their backyard, right? They don't need to fly across the country. They can bus an hour across the state, right? So, so we're always concerned about those things as well. Look, their TV contracts are going to be unwound in some instances. You know, there's going to be litigation that results from all of this as well. And so this is an industry in which this happens about every 10 years or so. There's a big unwinding of things that happens and winding up of other things that happens. It's not unlike banking, right? Maybe airlines as well, that similar things historically have happened.
You know, I think if the ideal happened, it would be more geographically appropriate. You kind of alluded to this, that there'd be, you know, and a lot of people have said this over the years, 4, maybe 5 conferences, you know, and that's what we have now, essentially, you know, 5 big ones. but more geographically appropriate, that, that you do some sort of realignment that keeps that in mind. That would be student-centric. That would be thinking in terms of what's in the best interest of the students, and would also retain, reignite a number of rivalries. But that's not going to happen.
Let's be realistic about this. The ideal of this would be great for the student athletes, not happening. Clearly that ship has sailed.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen at all. The one last thing before we get to a little deeper dive on a topic I want to talk about is the Cleveland baseball team officially changing their name to the Guardians. And you know, from our legal perspective, you know, some interesting things are emerging. You and I can, joust over whether or not it's a good name. I don't particularly like it, but that's, I'm not in Cleveland. That's not relevant. I don't, after reading, the freeway statues or traffic gods or whatever it is, I don't quite understand it. Some connections with some comic books. The Guardians name is, I will say, from my pedestrian standpoint, not a great choice.
You're a slight negative on that, right? I think is the instance here. And look, the surveys that I have seen that have done actually have come out slightly on the positive side.
Slightly positive.
Right. Slightly positive overall. Not a big change. It's interesting. I mean, the last six letters are the same. Right. Five letters from Guardians to Indians or Indians to Guardians is, you still have the Ians, the Dians. Right. But at the end, different name and different rationale behind it. And, I think we both are in favor of and have been for a long time of the name being changed. It's just what they actually changed it to probably wouldn't have been either one of our first choices.
The Washington football team looks like a great name right now.
So beyond that, what are the issues that you see?
Well, what's interesting, and we don't know enough about what conversations have taken place to really understand if there's a legal snafu that people are highlighting, that there's men's roller derby team called, guess what, the Cleveland Guardians. And guess what, their logo and the source of the meaning seems to be the same as the baseball team has derived all this from, and there's potential legal liability. And it would seem, I don't know, that you would have done what they call a Google search at a minimum to find out if there's anything else out there with the same name. And there are thorough methods to do this legal path to do this kind of search. That's why I hesitate a little bit. I can't believe they haven't taken the proper steps and they didn't vet all of this in the way that they could, which could cause significant delays and otherwise.
Yeah, you would imagine that the due diligence has been quite thorough. This would be a really big one to miss. Let's put it that way, right?
It's not a little league team. It's not,
right. And Ken, for the listeners who don't know, Ken has long time been a roller derby fan going back to his childhood when it was on TV. And I'm not kidding about that. And I believe there were probably some exam questions along the way that involved a potential hypothetical world roller derby franchise that your students saw over the years. But in all seriousness, this should be one that should be very easily caught. There's questions about whether or not the IP rights had lapsed, the trademarks and around it had lapsed or not. But we'll see where it winds up. But it's, certainly at a minimum going to take a bit more time before all of this is finalized. I don't think you can rush out and buy your Guardians jersey just yet.
Yeah, no, hold tight on that. But I can't believe it's not structured where they have a plan to move forward. So Scott, with those is kind of the topics that have caught our eye in the past few days. What do you want to dive into a little more deeply today?
Well, I think, there's a lot of things that we could dive into today. I mean, I think the name, image, likeness conversation that we're, again, at the very beginning of, but how it impacts, we've talked about how it impacts college athletes. What we haven't talked about a whole lot yet is how it impacts high school athletes. And there's been some conversation around that in the last week or so. And just curious as to your thoughts on name, image, and likeness and the high school student athlete.
Well, you know, what's interesting about it, I think if we put constraints on high school athletes, we're doing the same thing that we're doing with college athletes. I mean, if someone can monetize themselves, why would we prevent them from doing so? I mean, that it's more of a question than my strong belief at this point. But as I think about it, and this is not because high school is the one sports time of my life where maybe I could have made some money. it was one period of time where the local
joint. Whoa, time out. Let's back up. Do you think that Ken Shropshire, all city center for the Dorsey Dons, was going to get a sponsorship deal? Is that what I'm hearing?
You say that with such amazement. Maybe in conjunction with, because, you know, I'm a business guy, maybe in conjunction with my star quarterback, Julius Mathis, or my, you know, maybe in conjunction with, you know, these deals that I've seen that have been most fascinating have been the entire team deals, the entire offensive line deals. You know, I could see my offensive line getting a deal a la the Arkansas line with Leo's Barbecue, for example. And even if we got, you know, free meals on Fridays. So you belittle it, my friend.
But they're Shropshire on his own, and Shropshire is part of the larger offensive line, right? So, you know, just say, right? Win on Friday night, free haircut and a burger on Saturday, right?
There you go. But the question is there something wrong with it? I do, you know, my good friend Todd Boyd, at one point, I don't know where he is on this now, shifted at some point about, for example, high schoolers being able to go straight to the NBA. And he said, you know, at some point, not his exact words, because if you listen to this, you'll jump all over. I said, it's wrong. At some point, we need to be more paternalistic. At some point, we need to protect our kids. And so that may be more of the question. So at college, they're, you know, as grown as you, your first moment of being an adult as you're in college, but in high school, and then let's take it further. So middle school, elementary school, if you can find ways to get endorsements, then is that okay? Or is there something, you know, are you closer to Satan if you take money in the fifth grade for your athletic prowess?
Yeah. Look, there's no question that there is a line drawing problem, as there almost always is. And, you know, where do you draw that line with when is it acceptable to monetize your name, image, and likeness related to athletic ability, and when is it not? It raises two points to me. One is that by doing these deals earlier and earlier and earlier, you're professionalizing the experience at a younger age, losing a lot of what the benefits I think come from playing sports are, but you're also building the pressure on these kids at a younger age. And so from a burnout perspective, to go full circle back to Simone Biles, from a mental health perspective, you know, what are we doing to these kids? We need to think about this before we just say cavalierly, you know what, if you can monetize your name, image, likeness, go for it. If you're an 8-year-old skateboarder who can get, several million followers on TikTok, then go for it. Because there are the kids on YouTube, right, who, you know, make a lot of money, and TikTok and otherwise social media stars, influencers who do so at this, you know, really young age from... Yeah. So I worry about that from a mental health perspective. It's almost like the child actor kind of.
Yeah, I was going to say that. And we saw that, and we see that when we talk about this in sports about, and it's allowed though. It's allowed, but there's all kinds of stuff in California and New York law trying to protect the child actor. I mean, you know,
that's right.
Britney Spears is kind of our poster person now for the things that can go wrong. And how long it can last. I mean, what, she's 40 years old now, and she's still trying to free herself from those moments of presumably being protected while she was making money as a minor. So yeah, do we create another scenario where it's okay, or do we make the scenario better? Do we make and California and New York is the longtime talent type laws to protect kids that aren't always working well. I mean, the list of child stars gone bad is pretty long. I mean, it's pretty extensive.
I would agree. And if you look even in the sports world though, right? So going back to Jennifer Capriati and the WTA then passing a whole set of age restrictions that, you know, that is basically creates a step process in the limiting the amount of tournaments that you can play in, starting at, you know, a certain age and then building up over time to when you can become a full-fledged pro. Again, I mean, known colloquially as the Capriati rule, because she was playing, as a full-on pro at a very young age. And all that comes with that, and the ending the ending might turn out to be a happy one for her, but the journey, there were many, many difficult moments along the way. And, you know, as much as we can protect our athletes, and want to protect our athletes, that's an interesting, warning sign, I suppose.
So if we end up, so now in this moment, kind of going full circle and acting like we have a show that's organized here. So if we go full circle on this, maybe we've answered our own question. Maybe the reason to push against NIL at lower ages is mental health. I mean, maybe if we cut through it all, that's a reason why we get to this is probably not so much because, and I heard you drifting this direction. I know you're not a believer in this, not drifting towards the joy of athletics being spoiled as a kid, mere participation and all that. I don't know if, again, using my sordid athletic career, I don't know that if somebody paid me $10 a week to play on my YMCA football team in the fifth grade, if that would have made me, any worse than I am. But what I don't know, and if my love for the game would have changed or games would have changed any, but what I would want somebody to check on is the possibility of, is it possible that mentally there's something that goes wrong if you're not just allowed to play. And mm-hmm. there's a lot that's out there, but I don't think this connection has been made directly with NIL that the question that's coming up, there are athletes in the news now that are talking about leaving high school early so that they can participate in NIL and make big money early on.
So Quinn, I think you're specifically talking about Quinn Evers, who's been in the news recently, who's, the top rated quarterback headed to Ohio State. Is in a should I stay or should I go scenario, where he's considering skipping his senior year of high school to play in college, which, obviously allows you to then enter the NFL funnel eventually if you're good enough earlier on, but the potential to earn money when you're in college from name, image, and likeness. So there could be indeed a trickle-down effect for all this. Just to be clear, the high school, there's a high school governing body for our listeners who are unaware, right? The National Federation of High Schools, which has said that the name, image, likeness rulings don't change for high school student athletes. But the problem with that is that they don't really have a whole lot of power to force the schools to do anything, right? To force the local state high school associations to do anything. The state associations can have their own rules. And again, because we have this patchwork of state legislation that's being created on the topic, the states are going to be all over the place on this. That could lead to kids moving out of state, transferring for high school where they can make money off name, image, and likeness. There's a lot of other things that come from this. It is cascading, to say the least. There's absolutely no question about that.
It's big, but I think still there's going to be a lot of market settling out. In the end, are these deals really worthwhile for people that are signing these athletes up? I mean, where's the real value? And I think we'll see it settle out at some point. But there's so much excitement now, and the obvious question is this one we're talking about now. Well, how far down should we go? How far down should we allow it to go? But I think the pin we can put in this is pause on mental illness before you move on anything further than we have now, and make sure that that's not an issue that hasn't been focused on appropriately.
Yeah. And it's easy to say, okay, well, just let them go make money, right? But you, before you do anything, you really need to think through the consequences of what that, of that, what that policy specifically could be, one way or the other. There just needs to be a 360-degree thought process around that topic by the decision makers who are involved in these kinds of policymaking matters.
But be clear, if I go back in time, me, Winston Thompson, Laird Thornton, Billy Wiley, we would sponsor, we'd be the endorsement voices for Johnny's Pastrami, Bill's Tacos, Leo's Barbecue. We'd be making money or extremely overweight by supporting all the local high-powered fast food joints in the Crenshaw District.
And fair enough, you know, I'm not so sure that the Harrington boys soccer teams of the mid-80s would have been able to get the same kinds of sponsorships, even though the teams were pretty good. But your point is well taken. The pastrami place I was unaware of, by the way.
Oh, Johnny's, yeah. Johnny's, that's a story for another show. That it's been reincarnated as the neighborhood is being gentrified. thank you. Gentrified might be what's going on.
I don't know. I see what you did there, Ken. Good one.
Yeah, story for another day.
But all right. Yeah. So as we start to come to a close on today's episode, what's on deck that you're keeping your eye on in the coming days?
Well, the NBA draft is happening, and when this airs, we'll know what happened. But I'm watching, as this is the first year where this, we're beginning to see the little bit of the trickle of the new version of basketball, where the G League Ignite team, young men who went straight from high school to the pro version of the NBA, starter league, and a team designed specifically for the most elite basketball players coming out of high school, the Ignite Team Ignite. And so there are at least two guys that are projected to be in the top 10. It's going to be interesting to see if this tees up even more all these other leagues that we've talked about that are saying there's an alternative path. You don't have to go to college if you are good enough. There are paths to go straight to the pros, but this too, this, you know, and I think about this, I've been involved in education with some of this. It's another mental health kind of issue that we need to think about, that, you know, not so much, we'll certainly need to think about it for the young men that make it, or the young men that gave up the college path to do this. If you don't make it, that can be a struggle to figure out what's next. But even the guys that make it, as we've seen with all the young men that have gone into the NBA early, just to make sure the support systems are in place properly. So I'm watching that. It's the beginning of a longer story. What about you?
So it's funny because I am keeping an eye on that. I think with respect to the G League Ignite, my prediction and my crystal ball, which is broken so often, is that this is going to wind up being very successful, right? And that this will wind up being the catalyst for additional young men to follow in those players' footsteps. I do worry about more the kids who don't make it than I do the kids who do make it. With all the mental health question, you know, conversation that we've had today, I worry more about those who don't and what their future holds than those who do, who have their own set of issues, no question. And remember, this isn't going anywhere. Overtime Elite League, which is coming down the pike next year, is already signing kids up, and full professional model for teenage kids who choose to go that direction instead of playing for high schools. Again, full transparency, Zach Wiener, who runs Elite, is a former student of mine. He was a terrific kid as a college kid. He's a terrific young man, super smart. I love what he's built. And they've got the right people there. So if you put the right guardrails in place, the chances of something flipping over those guardrails and going wrong is decreased a lot. It's been a very thoughtful approach to OEL, Overtime Elite League. Now, will they have some missteps along the way? Of course they will. Everyone's going to have missteps along the way. But will they be able to overcome those missteps and provide a quality product that people are interested in and that young men are interested in playing in? That remains to be seen. But with respect, I actually do think, if I'm going to predict that one, I think it is going to work. But I am more confident in my bet on the G League Ignite working, because and I think tonight is going to be a positive and big step for that league.
Yeah, and for those concerned, like in the old days, about, you know, going from the high school to the NBA, it's just a few kids. I mean, in the Overtime Elite, I'm involved as an advisor. It's 30 kids from the best 30 kids from around the world, and they have educational programs in place. Overtime Elite, it's a handful, you know, 3 to 5 kids a year. So these are the very best, and it is, you know, if you are a computer whiz and coming out of high school, you can do some programming that nobody else can do. If Microsoft can set up a system for you to be successful early on, that's a good thing. I think, though, in both circumstances, and as you know, great place for us to end it. I think it's been a great conversation to really try to immerse mental health into what we kind of brush over sometimes. In both circumstances, the Microsoft computer scientist or the basketball player, the Simone Biles message is pretty clear that everybody needs to be looked out for.
Could not agree with you more. That's a perfect place for us to sign off for the day. For Ken Shropshire, this is Scott Rosner. You've been listening to the Sports Professors Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Take care.
The Sports Professors Podcast is brought to you by Global Sport Matters in collaboration with Columbia University. For more news and to sign up for our newsletter from Global Sport Matters, go to globalsportmatters.com. And for more from the Columbia University Sport Management Program, go to sps.columbia.edu/sports. This episode was produced by me, Kendall Jones, Manager of Events and Programs at the Global Sport Institute. And huge thanks to our sound designer and editor, Sam Esparza and Big U Music. Global Sport Matters podcast is a production of the Global Sport Institute at Arizona State University. Our Manager of Marketing and Communications is Crisal Valencia. Our Digital Communications Specialist is Brendan Kleen. And our Marketing and Event Assistants are Natalie Skegan, Aiden Corrales, and Kate Nelson. Find more episodes by searching for the Global Sport Matters podcast, and be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen. Stay up to date with the Global Sport Matters team by following us on Twitter. We're at Global Sport MTRS.